Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Teammates Figgin and Donick coming your way here on 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason here with you. And we are talking to Barry Trotz, the Predators general manager, as we do every Tuesday at 5 o'clock. The Olympics are over. We are glad to have that in the rear view. What an amazing experience that was over in Italy. And the season resumes on Thursday night. Barry, I hope your batteries are recharged, but I've got to ask you right off the bat, where were you watching and what was that like? Because, wow, what an amazing tournament.
I was watching at home. I was like everybody else. I got up early and put my slippers on and got a coffee to get myself up early and awake and started watching some hockey.
So just your thoughts on the game. The thing that jumped out to a lot of the experts, especially the ones that were there on hand, was just how fast the game was being played.
Yeah, it was played at the highest level. I mean, you had the best players playing under probably the biggest microscope they've ever been under, with the intensity off the charts. You had the best hockey that really the world can provide at this moment in time. I mean, outstanding talent, outstanding speed. Big moments, be it great saves, great opportunities, and it comes down to one play. How great is it? The only thing I wish for a game that was played at a better time for the whole, I'll say, Western Hemisphere to see it at more reasonable time hours. Especially the people on the West Coast.
Yeah, the people on the West Coast, boy, they had an early wake-up call for sure. Barry Trotz is brought to you by Green Ventures Landscaping and Gary Force Acura here on 102.5 The Game. So, Barry, like you said, it's a game of inches. In the three-on-three, like Cale Makar comes within maybe a fraction of a second of stealing the pass and having maybe a dead breakaway to win it for Canada. He can't quite get it. It's tipped ahead of him by Jack Hughes, who races down. Werenski wins a battle, passes to him. It's so amazing. 3-on-3 opens up so many possibilities. Like, it would be hard to imagine Cale Makar, Nathan MacKinnon, and Connor McDavid having the winning goal scored against them, three players of that magnitude. But in 3-on-3, it's so quick that what happens, that really anything can happen.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, isn't that scary when you just name those three names? You're going, there's no way that they're going to get scored on.
Mm-hmm.
They can all defend. They can all create offense. There's very few people on the planet that even can escape with them. And you're right. I mean, if Cale Makar gets that puck, which I thought he was going to get, I couldn't believe that my first thought was, the two other American players had already left the zone, and there's a loose puck, and Jack Hughes was able to just touch it before Cale Makar, and it pops over, and it could have been a 2 or 3-on-0 the other way for Canada, but Jack got it and moved it up, and lo and behold, he scores the winning goal. So it's milliseconds and just, a centimeter here, a centimeter there.
Do you think that in future Olympics they should rethink it and have the gold medal game be 5-on-5 until it ends?
I thought about, we had this discussion, it opens up so many hockey sort of discussions, the 3-on-3 in the Olympics, and I know why they probably do it. I would like to see probably a 10-minute 5-on-5, or one period 5-on-5 and then go to a 3-on-3. I do not want it to end in a shootout. That would be the worst. But I would like to see a little bit of 5-on-5 or at least 4-on-4 before we got to the 3-on-3. But that's a discussion for people in a lot higher position than I am.
We'll talk with Barry Trotz, an absolute Predators GM. Now, Barry, you guys have called Zach LaRue back up, and this is not his first time back up on a team. He was back up on a team, I think, last November or somewhere around there. But because of injury, he wasn't able to play. What did you guys see from him in Milwaukee, and what do you and Coach Bruno envision his role being here?
Well, it was quite simply, Zach has been the most impactful player in Milwaukee, probably game in and game out. I think at times we've called the guys like Reed Schaefer up, but once Zach got healthy, because he got an earlier call up before Christmas. I think you said it in November, and he had actually took a slap shot in Milwaukee. I believe it was in San Jose, and he kept playing on it. And everybody, we felt it was a bone bruise. Everybody couldn't find anything in terms of all the imaging. Our medical team found everything, and then we called him up as an extra guy because he deserved to be the first call up. And he was in the gym and doing some workouts, and then he came in with our doctors, who have just a wonderful team of doctors from Vanderbilt. He just said, how's your foot? And he said, it's actually getting a little bit sore. And they did some tests, looked at it even further, and they found that he would need some time off. And so he didn't get an opportunity to play last time. So he went back down after, rehab and getting better. And he was playing impactful minutes, having big impact on the every game. And we stayed healthy. So and now that at the trade deadline, we moved, guys like Matthew Wood and Sechkov, give him some time down there, that Zach continued to be the player that was having the biggest impact. So he's the guy that's up, and he's going to play, I think a similar role of what he did February, March last year, where he's killing penalties. He's playing defensive type roles, but he may get a little boost up in a third hole line with maybe a Marchessault or someone like that. So he's deserved to come up. So I think every time a player comes up, and especially if they're ready, and Zach has shown that he's ready for that call up, that he'll make it very difficult for us to have him go down again if ever. So that's what I expect from Zach. That once they get a taste of it, they don't want to go back down.
Now, Finland gets the bronze, and UC plays extremely well. Are you anticipating, now that the season is getting ramped back up and you guys got to make this push for the playoffs, do you expect some of that momentum that UC had in the Olympics to translate to the second half of the season?
I think so. Obviously, the Finnish national team is probably a little stronger than the Nashville Predators as a team, but I think Juice has had a really solid year. I think just like anybody else in our team, the start wasn't where we wanted it to be from everybody, so it affected his play. But he's, in this last, I'll say, 2 months, 2.5 months, I could say the difference in the game. I know I've gone downstairs, and we've been a slow starting team, and I have said that, we're down 2-0, we come back and win hockey games. But the real difference was when it was 2-0 that UC Saros has made two or three huge saves to keep it 2-0 or 2-1 to keep us in the game rather than extend it. So I thought he's been pretty solid for a long, long time, and he showed it in the Olympics, and I'm very, very proud of what he did, because that is high caliber, high quality, and you look what he did against the Canadians. I mean, he was Connor Hellebuck for the Finnish team against the Canadians, and unfortunately, Canada got the victory in the end on the power play, but he was outstanding, and I'm hoping he comes back and does the same for us.
Barry Trotz is with us. And Barry, along those lines, UC Saros, he had outstanding numbers in the entire tournament. He played all of the minutes. And of course, as we know, he is a guy that shoulders a lot of the load year in and year out as the starter. So this is probably a better question for Andrew Burnett that he'll get, I would guess, on Thursday. But does there need to be a little bit of managing his workload, knowing that he had to work so hard?
Yeah, no question. It's been a little bit of a concern all, I would say the last couple of years anyways, that you want to keep a little tread on Juice, but Juice likes to play lots. The coaching staff and especially the goaltending department have changed a lot of his routines. I mean, Juice used to go out for morning skate a lot of times and be out there for, basically an hour 15 on game day, which was insane. Now they have him, 25 minutes. We have a third e-bug goalie, if you will, that can come in and, sort of deal with that sort of workload. So we have been being creative to get a little bit of the workload off, but we just got to get him back to Nashville. He's not even back in Nashville tonight. He got flown right into the storm.
Oh, so boy.
Him and Eric Halla have not returned to Nashville as of yet.
Oh, boy. That storm is causing a lot of issues
it
up
is.
North,
yes,
for sure.
Yeah.
So with that in mind,
he'd have been better off going to Miami.
Yeah, he could have hopped in. They should have followed the other plane, I guess. Those guys look like they're having a good time down there.
They certainly do.
So, Barry, that is something that I know will be a huge theme for every team around the league, is regardless of how many Olympians you had playing, how many got eliminated early that were playing, or just the guys that haven't played a game in 3 weeks, being able to jump back in and be efficient right from the gate. The teams that can do it are going to get a big advantage here at a critical time of the year. What goes through your mind if you're a coach? How do you try to turn that light on as quick as possible?
Well, I think as a coach, you've got a number of different problems. For some teams that didn't have any of the Olympians, they've got all their guys there. They're probably doing some team building. They're working on their systems. They've got some continuity within them. A good example might be we're playing Chicago coming out of the break. I believe they only had Teravainen maybe as the only player there. So they'll probably have a lot of continuity with their group in terms of lines and that. Now they haven't played for a while, but they're a young group, so they'd be probably looking forward to playing hockey games again. On the other end, I think our next game is Dallas, who, they're probably like us, though they have a lot of Finnish players. Their Finns are, I know that some of them just are on their way back this afternoon. We're expecting to get Juice and Halla back a little later tonight. They had a lot of their group out, so there's probably not a lot of continuity in terms of their group, because they probably only had 13 or 14 practicing players for the most part, and you're going to get a bunch of guys coming back from the Olympics. So that's going to be a for the Finns they're coming back. I mean, it'll be a little bit different. They just came off an incredible high, the Olympians, and I know that. The U.S. Team, all the Olympians that are back, in D.C. tonight or in Miami yesterday. I mean, I would say to all the people watching, please do not criticize those young men. If they miss a game, a lot of teams are going to keep their guys out. But please, if you're a hockey fan, if you're a sports fan, if you're a fan of these guys. These guys have just got to the top of the mountain, and one of the things that you learn in life is that you get to the top of the mountain, you want to have an opportunity to enjoy the moment. And sometimes that moment is lasts for weeks, but sometimes that moment, if you can just have that moment, it's a couple days, and then they'll come down to earth and get back to being, you know, good teammates and being responsible players and the key to their franchises. So please don't judge those men, because they've done something great for their country. And, you know, it's really important, because there's teams that are on the, I'll say, on the bubble, and they might be missing one or two of their top players because, you know, they happen to be American. So those guys deserve that moment is what I guess what I'm saying, you know, and because that's a they're in a brotherhood forever.
It was really interesting. You could see that. You could feel that with both teams, really, how hard they had worked, how much they loved playing for one another and for their country. So that's a great point. And at the same time, I think there's just going to be this hunger to watch hockey, too, probably even from some fans that are new fans. Don't you think, Barry, with some of the games? I'm curious what Thursday looks like. I think people are going to be excited to watch a hockey game.
Yeah, I think so. I think, trust me, it's not going to be the same hockey that we just got to see in the final. Because that's the highest level that you'll ever see. But I think you're right. I think there's an appetite for the game. I think the Olympics was fantastic for our sport, just as the Four Nations was. And it continues to grow, you know, worldwide. I mean, we're seeing, you know, we're doing, you know, broadcasts in nations that don't have a lot of hockey. And that's a good thing, because there's more and more hockey players around the world enjoying our great game.
And you're absolutely right about that, Barry. Also, too, the women's team. Did you get a chance? And if you did or didn't, what do you think? How much of a progress has the Women's Hockey League and women's in general when it comes to hockey? How much has it grown over the years to you?
It's grown tremendously. And it's still got a lot of growth. You think about it, the women's game. I remember watching the women's game, you know, 10 years ago, and you know, the shots weren't very hard. The skill level wasn't very high, and it's continued to get higher and higher. And the speed of the game, the pace of the game, the things that the women are doing at this level is extremely impressive, and I'll tell you what, the women's game continues to grow. And if you talk to any woman who's played the game or is learning the game, they are as passionate as the men. And the more and more that the women play the game, the more and more you're going to see that level of play continue to go higher and higher. And it's impressive now, and it's going to be even more impressive in the future, because it's really opening up a whole nother fan base, if you will, for our game, and a whole nother level of passion for our game, you know, especially from the women. It has been absolutely wonderful to watch. And that U.S. women's team, mm-hmm. they were impressive, and they're going to be the absolute force for all the years going forward. I just think the U.S. women are going to be very, very dominant.
That's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Barry, before we let you go, last thing for you. I realize that this is all hypothetical. We could hang up this call, and you could get a call of an offer you can't refuse, and there could be a deal tonight. But is your sense now that it's more likely the teams will take it right to the wire with the trade decisions, or do you think we'll see something that starts the dominoes rolling?
I think you're going to see, talking to most of the everybody wants to do something that is in the playoffs right now. They want to do something immediate. And so they're trying to get ahead of it and get, you know, I'll say bargain prices right now. They're trying to do that. I would say teams that are, you know, needing to watch their team the next couple of games. You know, a lot of teams that I've talked to that, you know, you ask them, are you fully in now, or are you out? Or they're like, I've got three games in four nights. That'll say a lot to which direction we're going to point more. And a lot of teams are in that position where they go, you know what, I'm going to go through the weekend, see where we are. And I'm going at that point, if, you know, we have a good three games, I'm going to be in, and I'm going to be all in. And if we are in between, then I may not do anything and just nibble. And if we don't do well, we may be in sell mode. So I would say there's probably, you know, I would say there's probably six or seven, eight teams sort of in that mode. And then there's probably 10 or 12 teams that are, you know, we know we're going to be there. The level of we're going to do something, we'd rather do it now. But, you know, everybody's trying to just see exactly where they sit. And the prices quite haven't been established yet. You saw one trade, I think, today with Colorado and Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh moving Kulak to Colorado for Girard, and basically Colorado giving them a second round to take Girard off their hands and take Kulak, who's a veteran player, but at a cheaper price, so they got more flexibility.
Gotcha. Hey, Barry, thanks a lot for joining us. Great insight throughout the tournament. Back at it here, and we'll talk to you again next week. We'll see you at the rink on Thursday.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it.
All right. That's Barry Trotz, Predators general manager. His segment is presented by Green Ventures Landscaping and Gary Force Acura. We'll react to some of the things he said right there, especially in terms of the trade deadline when we come back. So stay tuned. You're listening to DVD here on 102.5 The Game. DVD rolling on here on this Tuesday afternoon. Sun starting to set here. Hope everybody's driving safe. Willie Donick, Derek Mason here with you. Good stuff from Barry Trotz. I love the insight on the women's game, the Olympic tournament as a whole, and shared some interesting little nuggets there just about the logistics of getting back to your team. And he mentioned that UC Saros and Eric Halla from Team Finland still haven't made it back because of all the weather complications. You may
but
have
they're
seen
in
this.
A state. Are they in a state?
He says he's hoping that they'll get here. I think he said later tonight or tomorrow, just depending on how they end
the
up.
The weather, yeah.
And you saw that the Team USA diverted to Miami. They were going to fly to New York, but the weather, there's just a brutal snowstorm, a nor'easter, as they call it up there. I mean, they're just getting buried.
Yes, they are.
So I just wonder how many players that's affecting. I guess it'll become more clear in the next day or two when teams are actually hitting the ice and playing for the first time. But, you know, that's an interesting thought. These first games where you haven't played in 3 weeks, even if you didn't play in the tournament, you got to be a little rusty. Even though you practice, you probably have fresh legs. But the sharpness, and then you're interspersing a couple of players who did play. Mm-hmm. They're in a different spot. But who's going to be able to look good, look sharp at such a critical time of the year? And you think about the Predators. If they stumble the first weekend, then that's going to make it even more likely that they trade some guys. Mm-hmm. And on the other side, if they win three in a row, who knows what it could look like. But isn't it crazy that decisions get made? You heard him when I was asking about how he thinks the trade deadline is going to go. Mm-hmm. How many of the GMs have called him and said, well, I'm going to wait to see, do we win a couple? Do we lose a couple when we start playing back? You got an 82-game season, and a GM is making decisions based on how a team plays in a two- or three-game sample when you've had 3 weeks off. That's a tough thing to try to wrap your arms around, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the Predators are sort of in that same boat, too.
Oh, no question. You know, he didn't reveal what his thoughts were, but
you
got to
believe
be part
that
of it. Yeah.
They're sort of in that same boat that
they're on the bubble.
That first three or four games, if you come out flat, then, you know, it's like, okay, what do we do? Unless the teams in front of you are also a few teams in front of you that are also flat. Or right behind you that are also flat, too. So then what do you do when, say, those teams around you, those two or three teams around you that are vying for that spot, what if they're flat, too? do you still make your decision based upon your three games or four games, or do you make it based upon everyone that's involved in potentially taking away that spot?
I thought it was interesting. He said he doesn't feel like the price is set yet for most of these deals. There was a deal today that he referenced, and it involved a guy that was drafted by the Predators, Sammy Girard. He was involved way back in that three-way trade that ended up bringing, I know, Kyle Turris to the Predators. That is a trade that people look back on and say, what happened? It seemed good at the time. Kyle Turris was good for about a half a season, then really started to dip. And this was a powerful Predators team. But Sam Girard was a young, up-and-coming defenseman that went to Colorado in that deal. Mm-hmm. He goes to Pittsburgh in a deal today. So I don't think that's the kind of deal that's going to get the dominoes flowing, but it just shows you that at any moment you could have a trade. But I thought it was interesting that Barry Trotz feels like the prices are going to change. Maybe your final offer isn't in yet because of all these things we're talking about.
Okay, based on what you've seen, and I know Barry gave his answer, and I'm not saying that Barry's answer isn't enough because it is. He's the GM of that team. He knows. But what have you seen from Zach LaRue when he, you know, his time here and then now the bulk of his time in Milwaukee, and now he gets the opportunity to come up, and how do you envision this team being different with him out there?
It's a great question because he's a little bit of a forgotten man. Mm-hmm. Because of he's had two different injuries that set him behind. He had one in training camp, and then as Barry Trotz said, he got injured and he wasn't really sure that he was injured. He thought it was just a bruise he was playing through. Then they found out it was broken, so he had to sit out for another month or so while it healed. And so that really set him back. From what I could see, and I haven't watched all of Milwaukee's games, he certainly had some big goals. He's had some overtime game winners. He's playing in all the situations. He's being counted on a really young team. So I wonder how that has helped him develop. So I'm really curious to see what he looks like, because last year he definitely flashed some skill. He's a guy that has that ingredient to his game. He stirs it up. He likes to get under the other team's skin, but he's also got enough skill to do some damage, I think, potentially, as a guy that could chip in, maybe in a perfect world, 15 goals. Like if he could get to his maximum potential. And he's the kind of guy that you would love to take a jump and really show that he belongs. And maybe, you know, Barry Trotz also, you know, always is referring to, we're trying to build that next core gradually as some of the guys like Roman Josi and Steven Stamkos age a little bit more. Who are the young guys that jump in there? Well, LaRue is a great example of a guy that I could see doing what Luke Evangelista is doing, maybe not as many points, but just taking another step in his game. I could also see him leveling out and just not end up turning into anything. Like, but that is such an essential thing, is in the coming years, what happens to Zach LaRue? What happens to Joachim Kemmel, right? Another guy. These are first-round picks, right? These are guys that have flashed some good things. But can they break through, or are they just going to be guys that, well, they're okay, but we're looking for something better? It could go either way.
Well, I'm sure they're looking for it to be an upgrade with, you know, both of those guys, and eventually a lot of these young guys that they're drafting high in the draft. Another one is Steven Stamkos. He has a no-move clause.
Right.
He gets to dictate where he wants to go, and we talked about the next three or four games being critical. How do you think his market is going to be if indeed the Preds don't, you know, come out of the break, you know, on a winning streak?
I think that one you got to handle delicately because he's got the no-move clause. I would be curious, because this is how it was. You know, one thing that was evident in that Olympic tournament, if you can shoot, and look, the pace and everything that Barry was talking about was certainly the big thing, right? How blistering the tempo was. It was just flying out there. And Stamkos, he's still pretty fast for his age, and he's evolved his game. I would imagine that there are some people, especially with that shot, in a playoff game,
could say, you know, Steven Stamkos could be the difference in winning a playoff series or losing a playoff series. So would they be interested in him? Well, he's got 2 years left with $8 million per year on the tab. So that's the first thing you got to decide is, are you willing to take that contract for two more years? Mm-hmm. If you are, then what are you offering in addition? Because I can see you calling me and saying, look, I love Steven Stamkos. If he's willing to waive the no trade, I'll take him. But I'm taking $16 million off of your payroll. I'm opening up big cap space for you. I don't want to then throw in a bunch more. And so I don't know how that would sound back to the Predators or for Steven Stamkos. He would have to say, yeah, I'm willing to go there or not. So all that to say, I would be surprised if he got moved. I would be surprised. Jonathan Marchessault could be in a little different category because he hasn't clicked as well. And so I don't know. I don't know what that market's going to look like. I wonder what the talk is going to break up. I think you're going to hear a lot of talk on Eric Halla, who had an excellent tournament. You're going to get a lot of talk on Michael Bunting, and I think you're going to get a lot of talk on Michael McCarron. Those are three guys that have no trade protection and they're free agents at the end of the year that don't have a new contract. So I think those are the logical guys that will get the most volume of calls. But as far as the value, Ryan O'Reilly, Stamkos have a ton of value, but they also are guys that, whew, they're holding the team together right now. So the team would change drastically if you'd move one or both of those guys, I would say. So that's it's good stuff from Barry Trotz today. We'll talk more on Thursday from Bridgestone Arena when the team resumes play against the Blackhawks. And the Predators are on that bubble. That game is a big swing game as to setting the tone for what's to come in the five games they have before the trade deadline hits on March the 6th. We'll come back and we will wrap up today's show. We'll go back through some things that we've discussed and get you ready for tomorrow as well here on 102.5 The Game. Final segment here on DVD. Coming down the home stretch, we've had some good stuff from the Combine today. Robert Sala talking. We had great interviews today with Mitch Light, with the Vanderbilt Basketball Outlook, the Joey Aguilar case. We had some great insights from Trevor Maddich today. Just talked to Barry Trotz. So a lot going on as we count down towards March Madness. Let's wind it back because we talked a lot of Robert Sala's stuff in the first segment of the show. But the interesting thing that we hit on was Brian Daboll and the relationship that Daboll is going to have with Sala, but also Daboll and Cam Ward. It's that trio is gonna define so many things for the Titans over the next few years, it would seem.
I think it is. But I think something that also we're gonna talk about tomorrow is a comment that Robert Sala's made about Brian Daboll, him knowing that this may only be a one-year deal. So to me, it's if you go in thinking about that and knowing that, who is the next guy up? You know, who is that next guy? Because you still have to keep that momentum of development with Cam Ward going. So this is where the next guy is important because you know.
Now, do you think, like, I'm sure in the interview process, it got talked about, right? It was some of the, I feel like Albert Breer talked about that aspect that Robert Sala presented. Hey, if we get Daboll, here's my plan for if whoever the offensive coordinator is gets a head job, this is how we would do it. Is there a guy on the staff that you think about or do you think it would be an outsider?
I'm not
because
sure.
Or is it even worth thinking about at this point? Like, the first things first, we got to hope that this works, right? He seemed pretty confident today that they're going to have success, and that's what you should say. But at the same time, until you do it, I don't know if it's worth the time to really look ahead and say, here's the guy I would have to replace Daboll. I mean, we got to get to point A before we can get to point B.
Well, I think, you know, Borgonzi, when they made the announcement and people asked, well, what were some of the reasons why you chose to go with Robert Sala? And he talked about, you know, his plan for this team, his plan for certain things. And I have to believe that a part of that plan was who succeeds the offensive coordinator, because I'm sure he had a guy that he wanted to go after. And it probably was Brian Daboll. So if you want to go after Brian Daboll or one of these other, whether it was Haley, one of these other guys, you got to give me a plan of, we expect this offense to be much better, our quarterback to be much better. What is your plan to replace the offensive coordinator? Because that has to be a real question. So I'm sure, I mean, they gave us a glimpse of sort of that question has been asked, and we loved his response.
Let's hear a little bit of that response. The Rich Eisen show today, they were asking a lot about this relationship between Saleh, Daboll, and Ward. Here's some of what was said.
With Daboll at the controls,
the expectations are going to be the same, you know, and it's why I was so attracted to Daboll. And
right.
Like I said, with the experience aspect, he's done it before.
Yeah.
He's done it with not once, but multiple times. He's a guy that we've had to go against several times. We've practiced against him. I just love the way he operates. I love the way I love his mindset. I love the way he speaks to his players. I love the confidence that he injects into his players, along with the accountability that he holds and the standard that he holds them to.
Mm-hmm.
He is a no-nonsense coach, but he does it in a way that still shows the love that these players need. And so when you're looking at a guy like Dabes, he's not going to be here long. We're going to have success. We're going to win a lot of football games. He's going to get another opportunity also.
Fourth overall.
So, pretty
he
confident.
Knows it. Yeah, he knows
he's only going to be here for a year, he thinks.
A year, maybe two. It's the same thing that happened with Matt LaFleur.
But is that overconfidence, or is that I think the preparedness is good. Mm-hmm. Would you have said that if you're the
– I think you got to be honest, because this is a guy that was up for head coaching jobs, meaning Brian Daboll.
Right.
So you have to be honest in your assessment of what you think is going to happen, if not next year, the year after, because you have confidence in the offensive coordinator that he's going to do such a good job that somebody's going to ask him to be a head coach again.
I would imagine that was probably part of the recruiting process too, mm-hmm. of Saleh and the interview. Say, hey, look, we hope you use this time here mm-hmm. to get another coaching job. We're rooting for you to do that. That's the right approach. I just, mm-hmm. I don't know if it's worth really thinking about all of what happens after mm-hmm. that now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Before you install everything. But, boy, he does seem very confident. And the tail end of that question, the expectation level that he started his answer with was just going through Daboll quarterback by quarterback, Josh Allen, and some early returns on Daniel Jones mm-hmm. and even Jackson Dart here recently. And as you mentioned, there was that whole process that he went through before the draft last year of really evaluating Cam Ward. So it does look like the table's set for Daboll to hit the ground running, especially with the news earlier this week that it looks like Cam Ward might be throwing earlier than people, at least in my mind. I didn't know if he was going to be throwing in March, but it does appear like he's going to at least be able to throw some mm-hmm. in the coming month or so.
And they're going to bring him on slow. There's no need to rush him. You know, as long as he's fully healthy and ready to go come July, mid-July, whenever they – I think they can report a little bit earlier now because they have a new head coach. So whenever that date is for the Titans, I'm sure Cam Ward will be ready to throw. You got what? 4 months almost, if not, yeah, 4 months really, to make sure that he's 100% once he step back on the field.
And it is apparent that with the process of getting Daboll in the fold, the relationship that Saleh already had with Daboll helped them win the competition. It's very clear that Daboll was sought after by a lot of teams. And he mentioned just how many teams, even more than normal, we're looking for not just a head coach, but coordinators. There was a bunch of jobs open there.
Yeah, and he could have taken any job. But he chose to, you know, come here and be a part of this coaching staff with a quarterback that he had evaluated. And, you know, it seemed like they wanted to move up to get him. So now, second go around, you get a chance to actually coach the guy that you wanted. So I think that's a good thing.
All right, D-Mace, before we wrap this up, there's, as we referenced before, Barry Trotz mentioned it. It's playing havoc with a lot of travel. Just getting the Olympic players back to their teams is a challenge, to say the least, for some of these guys. It's still ongoing. Hopefully, they all make it in time for the, especially the teams that play tomorrow. But we were just looking at some clips of just how heavy the snow's been up in, like, Massachusetts and New York. I know my in-laws are trying to get back up to Rhode Island. They've delayed for decided to stay here. They're visiting. They've decided to stay here for the next few days. Just say, let's clear it out. Let's not even try.
Yeah, let it get cleared out before
we
go.
They've gotten, even for that area, just a huge amount of snow.
Oh, wow.
What's the most you ever had when you were growing up in Michigan?
Man. Goodness. I know we've had a couple
Did you ever get up to 2 feet?
Oh, yeah. That 2 feet. That's nothing.
Okay.
That's nothing in
Michigan. So what was your protocol, you and your family, when you got the snow day? You and your siblings and your friends.
Well, first we had to shovel the snow.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. My dad made us shovel the snow because he would have to go to work. So we would have to shovel out the driveway, and then we had to shovel out the sidewalk and up to the front door. So we had to, because the mailman had to come. You know the mailman, rain, sleet, or snow. We got to deliver the mail. So we had to make way for the mailman. And then after that, it was a free fall. You do what you want to. Just don't bring those muddy shoes and those snow-filled shoes in the house.
Was it a snowball fight? Did you have a big hill? Was there a good spot to ride the sleds or anything?
Unfortunately, in the city, there wasn't too
not
many.
Much.
Yeah, not much good places. And then the college right up the street, University of Detroit, they were a private school. So, you know, they had sort of guards around their whole – so you couldn't go anywhere inside there to kind of slide down. But, no, man, we would make do. We would push each other on the sled down, you know, up and down the street. We even had chance, you know, guy grabbed the back of a car – and just slide, man. We did all types of things. All types of things.
I've seen
people like holding on the back, and I'm not lying, holding on to the back of buses, kind of like going down the street. You're like, what are they doing? But they used to do it.
I'm hoping now that we get to late February, I'm hoping that we're done with all that here.
I think we may have got our last
I'll tell you what, I was cold yesterday. It was bitter yesterday.
It was.
I was like, wait
freezing.
A minute. What happened to the sunny? We had the 55, 60 degree. So I'm hoping moving past it, I don't know if we've got one more big freeze. It got really cold last night.
It really did. It was bad.
If I had to hedge my bet, I think we have one more cold week. Or cold at least 3 days.
Do you think we get snow? Or do you think we're done with the snow?
Let's not put that out of the ether now.
I'm ready to turn the page.
I think we may get snow.
This could be... Well, I mean, we have the forecast and everything, but we might, on Take It to the Bank, have to do a little prediction of will there be snow one more time
before
it gets warm for good?
One more time here in the next couple of weeks.
Before Easter or something like that. I don't know.
I guess you never know, but man, I'm ready to thaw out.
Hey, I'm with you, Willie. I'm getting older. My bones, they need a little bit warmth.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm not even 30 yet.
Of course, the Predators. Where do we go coming up? Columbus.
Oh, boy.
Buffalo. Winnipeg.
So the warm spots.
I mean, they're sending
y'all
us out west.
Going to all warm spots.
We still have all the best spots for warm weather. You'll
all
be
the
fine.
Best spots for hockey. That's
great
where
spots
you're
for hockey. And, man, I mean, it could have been April, and you still have, like, Terry Crisp always tells the story that one year in Calgary, the Flames had an alumni golf tournament on Memorial Day.
Wow.
And it was snowed out.
I have cousins from Colorado that would tell me that it's snowing in April. I'm like,
see,
what?
Colorado, you expect that because of the mountains.
But still,
April. Well,
we'll get through it. Hopefully in Nashville we get some good baseball weather. The spring sports can get going. Let's see. All right, we're out of here for tonight. We're back at you tomorrow at 3 o'clock. We've got Jonathan Hutton tomorrow. We've got a big Vanderbilt basketball game at Memorial Gym tomorrow night at 6, Vanderbilt and Georgia. So we've got a lot in store for the show tomorrow. We're looking forward to it. So until then, everybody be safe, and we'll hit you up tomorrow at 3.
Be love, love on your people. Have a safe, blessed, and wonderful Tuesday. I love you. The team loves you. You hear that music. Don't you forget about us, because we won't forget about you. See you tomorrow at 3. Tomorrow is an abbreviated show. We go from 3 to 5:30, and then
Vandy men's basketball.
Vandy
goes,
men's Vanderbilt play. So good luck to them tomorrow. Thank you. I appreciate it, David.
Senior night as well. Shout out to the seniors.
Exactly. There you go. And a shout out once again to the women's gold medal hockey team. Good job, ladies. Peace.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.